All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, America. Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a CW2 type warrant officer, helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Welcome to Veterans Radio today. We're hoping that you can all give us a call because we're going to be talking about the VA benefits and how you apply and maybe how you apply for an appeal and maybe some other things. We've gotten a lot of emails from people this week, so we're going to be bringing up those ideas during the program. A couple of things that I wanted to mention is that we've got one major event that's coming up this week in our local area, and that's at the Gerald Ford Library on North Campus at the University of Michigan, and this is a part of the Vietnam War Lecture Series. And the guest is going to be Colonel Richard Camp, United States Army retired. He is going to be talking about Ring by Fire, the Siege of Khe Sanh. And in the little promo it's got here, it says that the this is the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive in 1968. And he writes that in 68, Tet Offensive began with a barrage of artillery fire on the afternoon of 21 January. And at that moment, the far-off pop of incoming rounds sent him racing for a trench a few feet from my above-ground bunker. Within minutes, a stretcher party loped past carrying one of my Marines, and he had been struck by a piece of shrapnel. The next 3 months, his days were spent dodging artillery, mortar, and rocket rounds. So, this is at 7 o'clock at the Gerald Ford Library on the University of Michigan campus. Starts at 7, as I mentioned again. That's the Tet Offensive. And next week, actually, we're going to be talking about the Tet Offensive here on Veterans Radio. And we do have another veteran who was at Khe Sanh during the beginning of the Tet Offensive, and I think he said he spent 72 days straight there, something along those lines. But I'm looking for other people who were in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive. I was not. I was there in 1969. We missed it. We only had what they called a mini Tet. I don't know how that counts, but that's what they told us. I do remember mortars and rockets, so let's put it that way. But we are looking for people to come on the program and talk to us about their experiences during the Tet Offensive. So you can, if you want to contact me, you can do so by sending me an email. That's Dale, D-A-L-E, at veteransradio.net. It's Dale at veteransradio.net, and we want to talk to you. We want to find out what happened during your experiences during the Tet Offensive in 1968? Again, that's at the Gerald Ford Library on the University of Michigan North Campus, starting at 7 p.m. That's Wednesday, January 31st. That's this coming Wednesday. So be there, be square, as they say. The other things that we're going to be talking about today, as I mentioned about the benefits and so forth, is we've got another guest on our line, and this is somebody who's on our program quite often, thankfully, and he is Brian Hayes, and Brian is a public relations officer or public affairs officer at the Ann Arbor VA, and so I want to talk to him in just a moment, and then I've got one other announcement we need to get to right away, and that's Dan Patrick, who is the executive director of our local Fisher House here in Ann Arbor. So, Dan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, how you doing, Dale?
I'm doing very well, and I know you're a lot warmer than we are.
That's true, but I got a lot of rain down here right now. So.
Okay.
At least it's sunny there, hopefully.
That's right. Well, we were able to track Dan down in Florida so just to give us an update on what is going on with a Fisher House. For those of us, our listeners, who are not aware of what a Fisher House is, it's sort of like a Ronald McDonald House for veterans and their families when they receive treatment, especially right now at the Ann Arbor VA. There are no Fisher Houses in Michigan, and we're trying to get the first one done. So on that note, Dan, it's up to you.
Well, thanks, Dale. It's been great. You know, we've been working side by side with guys like Brian Hayes. I'm glad I don't have to follow him up. He's a fantastic speaker. We came off 2017 really strong. We had our last match campaign, which was the Patriots Pledge. It ran through 9/11 Patriots Day until Veterans Day. Our goal was to raise $250,000 to accept a match from generous donors, and we ended up raising upwards of $370,000. So Michigan really showed up to support what we're doing and to support our veterans, so it was fantastic. Now we're in 2018, and we're hitting the ground running. So we are currently at about $1.6 million, and our goal is $3.5 million to cover the half of the construction cost. mm-hmm. and then national will match that. But we've also, as a community group, taken on an extra baggage, and that's that we wanted to raise another $1.5 million. And what that's for is to make sure that the families don't have to worry about anything. But when this house is dedicated, there's already a chunk of money set aside to make sure that they're absolutely taken care of.
All right. It's always good to have that expense money that's available for the people that are staying there and for the upkeep. My understanding is that once the Fisher House is complete, that all the management and the running of the facility would be turned over to the Ann Arbor VA.
That is correct. So we have a very unique public partnership. I don't know that there's too many in the nation of its kind, but going back to 1990, it's always worked just beautifully where, you know, a community group will help fundraise to get this house built. And then we turn the keys over to the VA, and they have a manager that runs it. We do keep our board on, and I'll stick around, and we just do that to help raise money and support Fisher House, Michigan. But really, it's in their hands, and it's worked beautifully for a decade.
Okay, so we've raised some money, but we need to raise some more money. Do you have any events coming up in the first quarter of the year?
We do. So right around Memorial Day, we do our Memorial Day match. We're actually still looking for donors who are willing to help put into that Memorial Day match, and then donors who are help going to try to, you know, make it so we can match that. Our goal this year is to have a $500,000 match. We've bumped it up from last year because we've seen Michigan show up, and we know that it's possible. So that's going to start on Memorial Day, and it runs for just a short time. So really, that's kind of that big point. If you're going to give, that's the time to do it, because that dollar turns into $2 from the donor, and then basically national doubles that. So $1 becomes $4 in that time. So it really makes a huge difference towards getting this house built.
Okay. Well, that's great. If there's anything that we can do to help out, Dan, let's let us know. We'll be more than happy to promote it or help out on some fundraising activities.
I will do. Thank you so much, Dale. Tell Brian I said hi.
I will. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. All right, so we're going to transition from the Fisher House, which is going to be attached to our Ann Arbor VA, to go over to the VA. Right now, joining us on the line is Brian Hayes, and Brian is a public affairs officer at the Ann Arbor VA. He is not on the line. Okay, so I'm going to move right along. Where did he go? Anyway, what we're going to talk about with the Ann Arbor VA, just until, you know, we finally connect with him, is that I was up there the other day, and I was just kind of amazed at the construction that's going on inside of the building itself, because the clinic that I had to go to had been all redone. It was the liver clinic, but it was all redone, and so I finally got to see my doctor not in a coat closet, which I thought was rather interesting. But it looked really good, and I'm assuming that they're going to be having the parking structure and everything else, and the welcoming center will be all done, and I'm hoping it'll be this year, but it sure makes it a lot easier with all the parking that's going on there. All right, well, if Brian gets back to us or something along the lines, just let me know, and we'll bring him on at that time, okay? All right, so if you want to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call here at Veterans Radio. If you have any question about benefits, appeals, anything that you want to know, I've got two experts in that are going to be able to help you out. So the number here is 844-838-1600, 844-838-1600. If you're in the local Southeast Michigan, you can call us at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600, and those are the studio numbers here at WAAM, Talk Radio 1600 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Michael Smith and Carol Ann Falzone, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you shuffle to the left, shuffle to the right. Shuffle around the circle till your head feels like. Shuffle down the hall till you see the sign. And you're back where you started at the end of the line.
All right, we're back on Veterans Radio. That was Michael J. Martin of the VA Shuffle. And so we're going to be talking about the VA and what else is going on with the Veterans Administration. And joining me in the studio is my good friend and our good friend here at Veterans Radio, and that's Michael Smith, who is with the Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs. here in Ann Arbor. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you so much, Dale. It's always good to be here in the studio with you.
It is always fun. And joining me on the line is one of our biggest veteran advocates in the local area, and that is retired Air Force Brigadier General Carol Ann Falzone.
Good afternoon, Dale and Mike.
How are you?
Good.
All right. I should mention that Carol Ann happens to be married to a guy who runs a law firm called Legal Help for Veterans, and they're pretty efficient, so I would suggest that those of you that are listening to have veterans' questions, we may have to refer you off to Legal Help at some point along the line. All right, so Carol Ann, I'm going to start with you. What's going on out there with the VA and so forth with their benefits programs? Is there anything that we should be aware of?
Well, I just think, Dale, it's more of the same. I know they have the brand new program that's going on right now. However, I think each case is very unique, with each veteran telling their story. And I would hope that they would either consult with, call us at Legal Help for Veterans, or call a county counselor. Mike Smith's really great at that, or a veteran service organization. Before you sign up and jump into a program with the claims, from what I've been seeing, they're still taking an amount of time with BVA, the Veterans Appeals process. It's still taking a good 3 to 4 years to get a decision. And so I think that's a little discouraging, Dale, with the cases. I would also encourage everybody to consult with someone before you just give up. I'm also seeing right now, for the very first time in a long time, that veterans are saying, I'm not going to go on any further. I've waited. I don't understand what's taking so long. And we obviously always encourage them not to give up on a claim.
I'm going to go right over to Michael on that one, because we talked briefly before the program about the new computer filing for disability. Could you kind of try to explain that a little bit to our audience and how effective it is right now?
Well, Dale, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has always tried to modernize itself as technology has made it, has become available to them. The first iteration at encouraging veterans to file their claims online was the VA Online Applications, or VONAP. And now they've stood up another online system called eBenefits. It's much like the My Health eVet account that veterans can sign up for if they're enrolled in the VA healthcare system. The problem with e-benefits is most veterans, when they're filing their claims, do not select a representative. And the e-benefits is not as up-to-date as veterans would want it to be in terms of information, and that information being, number one, readily available, and then understandable to the veteran in terms of what's the status of my claim, where is it now, what's going to happen next. E-benefits just doesn't provide that kind of human or personal touch. What we see in my office in Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs, and I've talked to my colleagues all over the state, there's about 135 county veteran service officers in 72 counties that cover about 76, because some counties have teaming agreements with surrounding counties to provide services. And they're all frustrated with the online process, the VA wanting to make itself veteran friendly, the VA encouraging veterans to use e-benefits. Even when you call their lines, they say, hey, look, you can sign up online for an e-benefits account, check on your claim, file claims, change your address, do all these wonderful things. But the problem is that when veterans do that, they'll come to our offices and they'll want us to give them the information that they can't get out of e-benefits. Mm-hmm. We can't give it to them because they've not selected a representative. So we have to go through the process of selecting a representative, getting that information into the VA, and then waiting the time that it takes for the VA to update the electronic system. But at some point, we will be able to get access to their claims folder in the Veterans Benefits Management System, because many of us have remote access to VA computing systems. And we have right now, we're literally looking at the electronic claims folder. We're looking at the notes that VA employees put into the record. We're looking at their development activities, what's going on, ordering of exams, when exams are actually uploaded into the system, when letters go out to the veteran, they're stored there. So we see a whole lot of information that's just not as available in e-benefits. So as much as we like the electronic opportunities that the VA are providing and the encouragement that comes from knowing that the VA is trying to be more veteran-friendly, there still needs to be a human involved, as General Fasson so eloquently stated. They veterans really, or claimants, all claimants, really need to see someone who has some expertise, mm-hmm. whether it's a lawyer who does what Legal Help for Veterans does, veteran service organizations, or county veteran service officers who have been trained and accredited by the VA to literally know their processes, know their procedures, know their forms, their rules, their regulations, so that we can advise rightly and guide them mm-hmm. through the claims process. Because unfortunately, as we all know, as much as the VA wants to be veteran friendly, it can be very complicated just to do a claim.
And you know, Michael, to piggyback a little bit on what you're saying, you're exactly correct. Even when we represent, you represent the veteran, we could get into VBMS, and sometimes through the e-benefits or my veteran, something gets erroneously placed in their file, i.e. like your appeal of 2 years is closed. Well, the veteran calls us and he or she is just like, what do you mean my appeal is closed? Does that mean they made a decision? And we'll go in, we don't have access to e-benefits, but we could go into VBMS and find out that, you know, we'll give them more information, or accidentally something has happened. We could correct that on the spot. The other thing that we're seeing, which is really hard for the VA to understand, even when we're working with them here out in the field, is all information needs now to be sent electronically to the Evidence Intake Center. And what they are telling us out in the field, it will be uploaded no greater than 48 hours. Well, we have seen some forms that we know we've sent in 3 and 4 months trying to get a decision that hasn't been uploaded into the system. And that makes it really difficult when you've got a DRO, a decision review officer, waiting for that information to make a decision. And so sometimes if they're really willing to work with us, we'll send in the information directly to them to expedite a case. So electronics is great, but it takes a human to make sure it gets placed in the file and the job gets uploaded. So there's still multiple issues that, you know, we need to contend with.
Well, I've got a caller on the line right now. His name is Mike as well. Mike, welcome to Veterans Radio. What's your question?
Oh, actually, I don't have a question. I have a comment.
Okay.
I'm a veteran, I'm a Coast Guard veteran, and I applied through normal channels for VA help. It was a claim, PTSD, and I was denied, and I ended up contacting the folks at Legal Help for Veterans, and they did a wonderful job. They took care of it. They got me squared away, and now I'm happily getting the benefits that I deserve.
Well, that's great. How long did it? When did you first file your claim, Mike?
The original claim was filed. It took about a year and a half to get an answer.
Okay.
And then the original claim, and then the appeal went in. And then after the appeal, it was about another 8 to 10 months, actually.
Mm. Okay, so we have to work on a speed up over at the big building in the sky for the VA, right?
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, for calling. I'm glad that they were able to solve your problem.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Want to remind our audience out there that you can give us a call. I think we might be having a little trouble with our toll-free line. So if you can call in at 734 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Our toll-free line is usually goes to my cell phone, and then it's supposed to be switched over to the station, but it looks like it's going only to my cell phone because it's ringing. And so we want to make sure that people can get in there and get your question answered. Michael, or actually I go to Carol Ann on this one, I guess. So we have a successful story here.
Yes. Well, and you know, here, I think we've been talking about the same thing, and I know sometimes it's very difficult with the weight. And, you know, we see sometimes that, okay, this case, this client came to us, and we try to keep you updated, even if it's to say, no news, I'm sorry. However, sometimes the veterans get discouraged with us, and they, and Michael probably knows this very well too, they shop. So they leave us and change POAs, and in the meantime, let's say they go to a county counselor or they go to a VSO, so then our process stops, you know, with communicating, trying to get the word as to where the process is, because we just don't look in the computer. I need to tell you, we go out there with our claims developers, myself, and make different have different interactions with the VA to try to see where a claim is. Another thing that we do, and in communicating with our veteran, if we hear that our veteran is going through a type of hardship, and I think this is really important, whether it be age, financial, your health has changed, and you've now been given a diagnosis that is terminal, in communicating and working one-on-one with our veteran, we are able to put that paperwork in, besides making a phone call and indicating that this veteran is going through hardship. And several times the case gets expedited. In the case of terminal illness, I've seen it turn around maybe in less than a month. And I think that's really critical for the veteran and his family to get those benefits before, you know, the end of life. Oh, yes, you could do a substitution claim, which a lot of people don't even know about. However, I think it gives that veteran peace of mind that it's been taken care of.
Okay, Monica, you were shaking your head. Yes.
Yes, General Fasson is absolutely correct. In the means by which we have to submit claims, whether it's the fax cover letters or fax cover sheets that were created by the Evidence Intake Center or the Claims Intake Center in Janesville, Wisconsin, or through the electronic method that I use to submit claims through Dimensions 360, there are places where you can indicate that you want the claim expedited, and the reasons are listed, either age, financial hardship, terminal illness. And when the VA gets those claims, yes, they're put to the front of the stack and they're worked. And she's absolutely right. We'll see turnarounds in 30 days or less.
Well, that's excellent. That's great. I have an email that I received from, where did he go? Okay, his name is Will. And Will had a CMP exam. What is that?
Compensation and pension exam. So okay. They just affectionately refer to it as a CNP exam.
CNP, okay. CNP exam. All right. He was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress and military sexual trauma, but the letter he got was that it was not considered service related. Could you kind of go into why that might occur? I mean, without obviously we don't know all the facts, but why that might be denied?
So when the former Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Honorable Mr. Shinseki, relaxed the standards for processing PTSD claims. One of the things he said was if a veteran has a diagnosis of PTSD, whether that's by a private provider or a VA physician, and a VA physician gives the opinion that his or her PTSD was related to either fear of terrorist activity or fear of enemy activity, or as a result of any stressors that they identify were related to their military service, including military sexual trauma, then that person would be granted service connection. So what we see when we file claims specifically with military sexual trauma or any other PTSD claim, We have to identify the stressors that that person experienced. Mm-hmm. What will happen is a VA physician will then examine the person according to the DSM-5 criteria to try to diagnose PTSD. And the disability benefits questionnaire, first thing it asks is, has this veteran ever been diagnosed with PTSD or does this veteran have PTSD? Mm-hmm. Then the next, then they go down through a series of diagnostic questions, and then the bottom line is the veteran's PTSD related to the stressors that they identified on the form, which is a VA form 21-0781. And if that physician says, if that physician says no, yes, you can have a diagnosis of PTSD and you could have had some horrible things that happened to you. But if that doctor says in his or her opinion, your PTSD is not related to that stressor, they will deny service connection.
Okay, we've got less than a minute, so we're going to kind of let everybody think about that one. And we're going to take a break for the news, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this whole thing. About now this gentleman is in Jefferson Barracks in Missouri as a VA down there. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Will and see what we can do to help him out. So, again, for you out there, if you have any questions about your benefits or what you may be entitled to or what, you know, what might be going on out there, give us a call here at Veterans Radio, 734-822-1600. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
A waitress can give you a coffee. A mother can wipe a tear. Several men can build a bridge, but none of them come near to your early morning rises and long and dusty days. We are proud Americans who deliver, no matter the price we pay. For your service I'll raise my flag, your honor escalates, for your courage and your foot.
All right, that was Suzanne McDermott who sent us that CD. The song is entitled I'll Raise My Flag Today. And so anyway, you can find her. Her last name is spelled M-A-C-D-E-R-M-I-D. The other thing I have to make is somebody's calling me on my phone again. Go to the local. Sorry, folks. Where was I going? Oh, yeah. I have to point out that Sammy Davis contacted me after we did that Medal of Honor about him, and he says, I can swim. So I just want to let you know that he didn't necessarily use the air mattress because he couldn't swim. So the number here, again, if you've got a question about VA benefits and anything along those lines, is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. For whatever reason, the other number is not kicking over like it's supposed to. So let's make sure we can do it that way. We were just talking about a young man. Actually, he said he was in the service from 70 to 74, whose PTSD claim had been denied because they said it wasn't service-related. And you mentioned another story, and of course, without mentioning names or anything like that, that you said was similar.
Yes. I had a young lady who experienced military sexual trauma and was diagnosed by a psychiatrist, a medical doctor, with PTSD and treated over a period of 4 years by that same doctor. Mm-hmm. We filed her claim for service connection for PTSD. She went down to a CNP or compensation and pension examination at the Detroit VA Medical Center, and a doctor there diagnosed her with bipolar disorder. Now, if the doctors diagnose a different medical condition or different mental health condition, the VA Veterans Benefits Administration in their exam instructions will still ask, is there a different mental health diagnosis? Mm-hmm. Is that mental health diagnosis related to the stressor that the person stated they experienced in the military? And this doctor not only said she doesn't have PTSD, but then said her bipolar disorder was not related to being raped in the Navy, but that it was related to her current social, economic situation going on in her family. And, you know, it's horrible because now you've got to go back and try to refute a doctor because that's the evidence that's necessary to overturn a bad decision like that.
Dale?
Yes, go ahead.
I want to piggyback, and Michael, that is another case story that, you know, with development, and you've got expert witness that's going to take some time to correct. I want to go back to Dale, to Will, to Will's story, because I think something is very critical with what I would say to Will in trying to understand why he was denied. I would ask Will who developed his story, because telling your story is very critical, that you know that you're going to put all the pieces in prior to being granted the CNP exam. And so with that, I would say, did he indicate different stressors, the period of time, articles, locations, evidence of the PTSD occurring, particularly while you're on service? So the development is very important. What we also are seeing right now is some individuals, CNP exams are either delayed, or if a CNP exam was given greater than 2 years, it particularly should be thrown out and another exam should be given to evaluate the diagnosis or that will go into the rating. Something else we've seen with PTSD in particular is there was a ruling maybe a year and a half ago that came out that only certain physicians, like a neurologist, a psychiatrist, can examine for a CNP, could examine the patient for PTSD diagnosis. And I think that's really critical, too. We've seen the denials come across, and we have thought that the inappropriate examiner gave the rule that did the exam, and then that contributed to the DRO to say, no, this person does not have PTSD. So the stressors, how was the story, your story developed? And then what's real critical is the follow-up SOC, which is the statement of the case. Why in that write-up, it will tell what occurred to give the denial. But we've been seeing lately, and we've been calling it on it, if the CNP isn't timely, if the appropriate examiner hasn't done that exam, we've been able to go back in very quickly and get that redone.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this. Is that the initial examination or whatever you do on the outside should be done by a neurologist and or a psychiatrist, not a psychologist?
No. It doesn't have to be done on the outside. When the VA orders an exam, only a couple groups of physicians that could evaluate for PTSD in the VA system. This is their law. So whether they send it out to a contractor, it still has to be the right category of evaluator with the PTSD.
Okay, Michael?
Well, that's correct. The ruling was in particular with those who are diagnosed with PTSD and a traumatic brain injury, meaning that if they're going in for an increased evaluation for post-traumatic stress disorder, they also have to examine them by a neurosurgeon for their traumatic brain injury symptomatology, or vice versa. If they're going in and requesting an increase in their TBI or traumatic brain injury evaluation, the VA also has to schedule them for a psychiatric evaluation as well. Those two are going hand in hand. But as General Fasson pointed out, only a medical doctor, psychiatrist, or a doctor of psychology can actually approach the diagnosis of PTSD. It can't be a nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. It can't be a physician's assistant. It has to be a doctor of psychology or a psychiatrist.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well,
and the other component to that, which, you know, even for civilians to find, you know, a neurosurgeon, a neurologist, a psychiatrist, I mean, that sometimes is very hard. That's some of the physician work groups that, you know, they're in demand. And so, you know, trying to schedule an appointment, getting all that done. But if the VA is going to not follow their own rules, then they should not deny by giving it to, an inappropriate provider. And it's like when we notice that, that's happening more frequently, we call them on it, and they're like, oh, we didn't know that rule. So if you're scheduling, even with the contractor, it really needs review that. So I would tell Will there's some things that I would look at in his case with that denial.
And she's right. With military sexual trauma, as you can probably imagine, a greater percentage of those occurrences are unreported. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs developed a certain special set of rules for how they're going to develop for those cases. And in the one that I was referring to, we obtained the service personnel records. We went through every single one of what the VA looks at as flags or indicators that something happened. And you had the stellar sailor that was walking on water, then all of a sudden we have a dip in the performance, mm-hmm. leading to her separation. Okay. And weight gain, checking herself into clinics, medical records showing that there was suicidal and homicidal ideation. All those things were the slippery slope that were the indicators that mm-hmm. something happened at one point that took this stellar sailor down this path. And by putting that together and submitting that, it was more than, like she said, just the diagnosis from the physician and the treatment records from the physician. We put forward that full, well-developed claim. And I have to give a shout-out to Nicole Nielsen, who is the military sexual trauma coordinator at the VA regional office in Detroit. She really led the doctor to water, essentially. Mm-hmm. She tabbed out every single one of those things that we submitted, showing her in the personnel record where things were going wrong. I wrote a 4-page chronology by date, indicating the things that had happened and showing how she went down that slippery slope. She tabbed it out for the examiner, referred the examiner to A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. So 8 different tabs in the exam request saying, okay, doc, look at these things. This is what we mm-hmm. can show supports her claim for military sexual trauma. And no, the doctor didn't give the diagnosis of PTSD.
Okay.
She diagnosed a different mental health condition and then said, oh, and by the way, I don't believe bipolar disorder was related to her, what happened to her. So now, we've got to go back and we've got her doctor on board. We've got other doctors on board. She's involved in some other things that are going to be confirmations of her diagnosis and then we'll resubmit.
Okay. Well, there's so many different cases that are going on out there, I'm sure. I was talking to a group of Iraq-Afghanistan veterans at the local community college where I teach, and they're very interested in finding out more about what benefits they may be entitled to and what conditions that they may be able to file benefits on. And I was wondering if you could address those. Are they just standard ones, or do they have a kind of a special incidents that occur in because of their service that you're running into?
Well, those personnel who served in Southwest Asia in the theaters of operation includes more than just Afghanistan and Iraq. It can include Uzbekistan, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and other surrounding countries because they were exposed to certain environmental things mm-hmm. that are causing disabilities now. And more importantly, many of them stood over burn pits. And I would, yes, very much encourage them to investigate what is potentially available to them because they were exposed to certain environmental and other conditions that are leading to a certain amount of disabilities that the VA now is recognizing are presumptive, meaning mm-hmm. just like herbicide-exposed veterans have a certain list of medical conditions that the VA presumes is related to them being exposed to herbicides. Likewise, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, or any gastrointestinal functional disorder. Help me out, General Fasson.
Mike, you're doing awesome. I think the cancer.
Oh, chronic fatigue. Fatigue.
The fatigue syndrome. The other thing that's coming up is, Dale, and I think every veteran needs to go see somebody and tell their story. When, you know, if you're talking to a whole group, you're just not going to go down, and everybody doesn't have the same thing. So something could get missed, and that's why building a good relationship. I mean, what Mike described for her, his female that he's working with, you know, I was sitting here and I'm saddened because, you know, everybody is listening to all the sexual assault issues right now. And one thing, one case that I worked at, they said, well, why didn't she report it? Why didn't she prove it? You know, it's really hard to say why didn't they do that when your career potentially is going to be over if it's your commanding officer. Or, and this doesn't only happen to females. It happens to males also.
Yes.
So with this group, you know, we're seeing more skin conditions, the irritable bowels. You need the burn pits, as we've just heard that great documentary. It's going to be causing different forms of cancers. You just need to go in, and even if the VA doesn't have a presumptive today for you, file a claim. Talk to somebody about what you're going through. Remember the factor that for 5 years when you get out of the service, you could go to the VA. Get some assistance so that your time doesn't go, you know, awry, and then 7 years, 10 years, you know, it's full blown.
Right. I always encourage people to do that. And I also encourage them to see a veteran service officer, you know, wherever they happen to be. And probably, the, you know, because you get the question, or we get a lot of, or I get a lot of these questions, you know, where do I find one? I think word of mouth is probably the best way to find a really good, competent VSO type of person. And I know that other states have county offices much like ours. There's two questions that I received this week. One was a gentleman from, where does he live? Indiana. And his question was that he was in the military in 1991, and where a recruit was killed and died in his arms. And so he filed a claim, you know, and he's suffering from traumatic, probably post-traumatic stress. I can certainly understand why. But they lost his 201 file. What is a 201 file?
The
or
20,
is that a typo?
No, 201 is the military personnel records jacket.
Okay.
So it's his personnel
file. All right.
He says,
they can't find half my 201 file. you can tell he's a little upset. I can't read everything in here. The VFW is trying to help. So is my congressman. I don't know what I can do to make them understand that this all started because of one unknown soldier who died in my lap, and he doesn't know the name of this particular soldier. And so he says, excuse me, this gets you upset here. He says he sees him every night. He says, I repeat every night, I don't know his name. He's not in my company. I don't expect an answer, but I'll try to find out how many of us are out there that are turned away and losing homes and families. That kind of segues into the one that we talked about real briefly, where I got another letter from a gentleman in Texas who's losing his house, and they're also taking away his benefits. Or not taking, the VA's not taking him away, but they're what's the term? Garnishing his disability benefits.
That is correct. So the thing about post-traumatic stress disorder, especially non-combat related, is the VA has to verify the stressor, or they have to verify the information. So even if he doesn't know what company this person was in, the VA can request from the Branch of Services Casualty Assistance Office if there was a casualty on that post during that time frame, and then
go from there.
They can go from there, especially when you can't identify a name. And yes, unfortunately, for those of us who had a VA home loan guarantee and we lost that house to foreclosure, it does create a debt for the amount of money that the VA guaranteed on the loan, and they paid the lending institution at the time of default. They can, at a future time, go after the veteran to collect the debt, and the means by which they do it, if they're receiving disability compensation or a monetary benefit, that's the easiest way to do it, is they just garnish their compensation pay.
Wow. Oh, man. Whew. All right, so we got another homeless vet out there. Where was I going to go? Sorry. So, Carol Ann, the VA's computer programs to help people file claims, I'm sure that there must be some issues with that with older veterans. I mean, we are definitely not computer literate.
Well, I would tell you that if you don't have a computer, if you're not computer literate, the veteran's not going to do it. And that's another sad issue, and that's why reaching out to a county counselor, a VSO, call Legal Help for Veterans. We do everything for you. As Mike described in the case with the young woman, I mean, putting together arguments, briefs, working with relationship experts in the VA that you know, whether it's sexual trauma, mental health, a nurse practitioner. We do all of that. And so if the veteran is not computer savvy, I would tell you, don't do it. Don't do it anyways on your own. You might be missing some expertise from one of these other agencies that, it's like a doctor. Are you going to go to a doctor? Of course, a nurse would say this. If you've only done something one or two times, or are you going to go to that physician who's world-renowned and has done that surgery 2,000 and 3,000 times? Mm-hmm. So, we're your experts out in the field. So we could supply that through the electronic system. We could help you with all of that. But I think sometimes putting the information in wrong or not complete, it potentially could get denied. And if you've waited, like one of the callers, he waited 18 months before it was even looked at. I do know they'll deny if stuff isn't filled out correctly. They send it back. Are you waiting another lengthy period of time? So please reach out.
And the VA has now, gone to a centralized mail where they have one claims intake center, which is in Janesville, Wisconsin, where veterans or veteran service organization representatives or anyone who's working in the claims process either faxes or mails the claim, unless you have access to Dimensions 360, which is where you can actually directly upload the claim into the VA computing system. With that being said, the VA is processing the claim. So for instance, a disability compensation claim has five stages. There's establishment and control. The next stage is development. The next stage is rating. The next stage is award generation. And then the last stage is what they call promulgation. And I think I've said this before. It's a fancy way of just saying they mail the letter to the veteran informing him or her of their decision. Well, in that five-stage process, a claim is being moved around electronically in the National Work Queue. And it could be at five different stations of the 56 different regional offices of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and never once be in Detroit.
I've noticed that. I've gotten letters. I got a letter from
Janesville.
Janesville, and I got another one from Atlanta.
That's correct. So, and a lot of times if you remember, General Fasson, the old letters that the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs would generate had the actual office. It said, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Detroit Regional Office. Now it's just blank. It doesn't tell you where it came from. It just gives you your decision and a letter. The advocacy role of a representative has now been extremely heightened because right at my fingertips, I have access to that information because of my training and accreditations. I have remote access to the VA computing system, much like Legal Help for Veterans and other veteran service organizations, because the advocacy role that we used to be able to provide in the Detroit regional office or in any regional office has been horribly reduced. Mm-hmm. If my claim is represented by, say, for instance, the American Legion, and I want to call Gary Easterling at the American Legion office in Detroit, his advocacy role is somewhat limited because that claim is in San Diego or it's in Seattle or it's in Waco, Texas. So, it's having access to information and talking to people who know this business, as General Fasson again, so eloquently said in comparing us to, say, for instance, a surgeon who's performed a surgery 200,000 times. We know the processes, we know the procedures, the rules, the regulations, the forms, what needs to be done at each stage, how to have that dance with the VA. When they take two steps to the left, mm-hmm. we want to take two steps with them. So if you're out of sync with them, you're out of step with them, then you'll get a denial, and I hate to say it, they're not real good about informing why.
Okay. We got about 2 minutes left, a little bit less than 2 minutes. So, General Falzone, any final comments?
Well, you know what? It sounds like, and I'm sitting here thinking, wow, why would I want to do anything with the VA? So I want to say, you know, they try their hardest. And that's why, you know, in working with them, developing a relationship, if something has gone wrong or it seems really lengthy, you know, getting out there, putting the personal touch on it will help our veterans. The VA, God bless them, they are trying to help our veterans. You know, this is huge. I think we need to be in complete partnership and teamwork and help our veterans get these claims properly and timely adjudicated.
Okay. Michael,
I'd have to, seconds. Yeah, I have same to thing. Caveat that and say the same thing. You're right. The VA and the people that work there they're veterans, they're spouses of veterans, they're people who have veterans at heart, but they are heavily regulated. They are very constrained by laws and rules, and they have to follow them. And yes, it's good to work in relationship with them, in cooperation with them, in collaboration to resolve the issues that present themselves.
Okay. Thank you both very much for being on the program. We're hoping to have you both back at the end of February, and we'll see what news we can find at that time. I got 10 seconds to say goodbye, so thank you all both very much. You've been listening to Veterans Radio. Until next week, you are dismissed.